We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
As we build toward the celebration of the 100th anniversary of BGSU football, we turn back the clock to the 1960s on this episode of the Ziggy Cast.
This is the BGSU Ziggy Cast from Learfield, your home for Falcons updates, interviews, previews, and highlights. Now, here is your host, Todd Walker.
Thanks for being with us. A new episode of the Ziggy Cast in conjunction with the ongoing celebration of 100 years of BGSU football. We will turn back the clock to the 1960s. Of course, we'll have the official 100th anniversary of BGSU football coming up later this season on October 12th when the Falcons host the Toledo Rockets. And the BGSUFalcons.com website has been going over each decade of BGSU football, with the first year being 1919. And this week, we're all the way up now to the 1960s. Of course, it was a transformative time, really, for BGSU football as the program was coming off the 1959 National Championship in the college division under Coach Dwight Perry. And Coach Perry remained the head coach through 1964 with a very high level of success. Then one of his assistants, Bob Gibson, took over. And then it was Don Nealon for the last 2 years of the decade. And unfortunately, as time went on, Bowling Green sort of slipped back from the very top of the Mid-American Conference in the latter half of the 60s, but was still very competitive. And Coach Nealon took the team into the 70s. In fact, coached from 1968 through 1976, a 9-year run before Denny Stoltz came in. Coach Nealon had a lot of success, but never a MAC championship. A typical year would be 6-4 or 7-3, but a lot of great players and great memories nonetheless. And we will visit with Coach Nealon coming up. Also, as a way to turn back the clock to the 1960s, we will get with Phil Villapiano, one of the most colorful players in BGSU history, and get some of his thoughts and remembrances. We'll start with Coach Don Nealon, however. I had a chance to visit with Coach Nealon back in September of 2011. It was on the occasion of Bowling Green playing at West Virginia. Of course, Coach Nealon was the longtime head coach at West Virginia in the 80s and 90s and remains a fixture there in Morgantown. With that as your context, here's how our interview went back in September of 2011. My interview began by asking him about the week's happenings leading up to that game that day, and it was a fundraising time for Coach Nealon and the West Virginia football program.
We had a golf outing yesterday, and also a dinner last night, and they raised right around $1 million, which is a pretty good chunk, and they're going to endow quarterback scholarships, and they're going to call them the Don Nealon Quarterback Scholarship. So the quarterbacks that receive scholarships from now on will be under my name.
Well, it's, I guess, kind of full circle, because your collegiate career began as a quarterback for Doit Perry here at BGSU. Let's go back to those days, because you were Doit's first quarterback, but of course you were, when you came to Bowling Green, he was not the head coach. It was Coach Whitaker at that time, correct?
Right, that's exactly right. I played on the freshman team for Forrest Creason, and Bob Whitaker was our head coach, and things were not going very well at Bowling Green at that time. Bob Whitaker was absolutely a great, great football coach, but, you know, he was starting to, he was older, and he didn't really believe in recruiting, and recruiting had started to become the name of the game, so to speak, and anyhow, they replaced Coach Whitaker with Doit Perry from Ohio State, and he came in and he just overwhelmed everybody. What Doit did for that school was just unbelievable. When Doit got there, they just started to win. He had, Doit was amazing when he came in. He looked less like a coach. He acted less like a coach, and he was the best coach in the country. He was just an unbelievable personality. Every guy on the team fell in love with him. Doit brought in some great coaches. One of them was Bo Schembechler, the legendary Michigan coach and Miami of Ohio coach. And all the guys just got excited about playing football, and he turned the program immediately.
To buttress your point, Coach Nealon, the two previous teams went 3-15. And then in Doit's first year, 7-1-1. That was your sophomore year, of course, in those days. Freshmen did not even have the chance to play varsity. So as a sophomore to be on the team, and I guess you were you the backup quarterback the first year there?
I don't remember exactly, but I know I started most of the games. I think Jim got hurt some, but I started probably, I guess we played 9 or 10 games back then. I probably started 75 to 80% of them. But I think maybe had Jim not gotten hurt, maybe I wouldn't have started that many. I don't know.
Coach, you went on to play two more years for Doit Perry. 21-2-4 was the cumulative record during your 3 years on the varsity squad. And then you left Bowling Green for a while, but you returned as an assistant coach under Coach Gibson, right?
Right. I went and I coached high school football. I was the coach at Mansfield and Canton South and Canton McKinley. And I spent a year at the University of Cincinnati, and when Gibby got the job, he somehow persuaded me to take a pay cut to come back to Bowling Green. And as a defensive coach, I said, "Gibby, I'm an offensive coach. What do you want me to coach your defense for?" He says, "You're a coach. You can coach anything." So anyhow, I ended up coming back and coached the defense for Gibb, and Bob Gibson was a great coach. Learned a lot of football from him, and of course, at that time we all taught school. It was a different situation. Doit's staff taught, Gibby's staff taught.
With that first year you were an assistant, then the next year you became the head coach. Talk about the transition there and how it all came about that Coach Gibson was not there anymore and you took over as head coach in 68.
Yeah, I was 32 years old, and I was the youngest head football coach in America at that time, and Things were pretty tough at Bowling Green at that time. You know, Doit had great, great, great success. Gibby had real good success, but we didn't have much money to recruit, and the league was starting to change. They were changing head coaches, and they were not teaching school. And they were able to spend all their time with recruiting and coaching football. And Bob Gibson just decided he wasn't going to coach anymore and was going to go into pro football. And lo and behold, I end up with the job. And we were a little short of personnel at that time. And it was an uphill battle because I continued to teach. All my coaches continued to teach. And the rest of the teams in our league were not teaching school. And that became a real thorn to me. And our schedule started to get tougher. We weren't playing teams like Baldwin Wallace and Defiance anymore like when I played there. All of a sudden it was San Diego State and it was Syracuse and it was Purdue, and we survived somehow and won a few games. But I always felt when I was there, had the administration wanted to help us, we could have been a lot better.
Don Nealon is our guest here on the Toledo Blade Falcon Flashback. The Falcons, during Coach Nealon's years, the most seasons were winning seasons along the lines of 7-3, 6-4-1, 6-3-1, only one losing season in your tenure. But after the 76 season, it was time to move on for Don Nealon. Talk about that.
Bo was a great friend of mine. And I would go up there in the spring and watch him practice a lot. Anyhow, after that season, I called Bo, and I said, you know, Coach, I'm running faster than I've ever run in my life, but I'm not getting anywhere. He said, why don't you come up here with me? He said, Gary Moeller's going to get the Illinois job. I'd love to have you on my staff. So I went home and told my wife, hey, gang, we're off to Michigan, man. I can't wait. And so I was very fortunate to go up there with Bo for 3 years. That 3 years at Michigan really, really helped me because, you know, I was young when I got that job at Bowling Green. And like I say, with the teaching responsibilities with all my coaches, we had to work till 2 in the morning, sometimes even later than that because I couldn't meet with them during the day. And so when I went to Michigan, I felt I was going into one of the best coaching staffs in the country and one of the very best football programs in the country. And I found out the stuff we were doing at Bowling Green was pretty much the same stuff they did at Michigan. Our Dwight Perry's principles and directives that I had used all through coaching, Bo Schembechler was still using. His player-coach relationship, his player-player relationship, all that stuff. Bo learned that stuff from Dwight and Woody Hayes. And anyhow, so I became a very confident guy at Michigan. I said to myself, if I ever get a chance to be a head coach again, I'm going to be daggone good. And lo and behold, 3 years up there, and the phone rang and said, West Virginia said, hey, we want you to come down here and be our coach. Never wrote a letter, never made a phone call for the job. It was amazing. I don't know how in the devil they picked me, but they did. And I ended up there at West Virginia, and it turned out to be a great thing because we built a new stadium and we added on to it and built a fantastic weight room and an indoor facility and new practice fields and my fingerprints on all of them. And when you guys come down here, you're going to come into probably the finest venue in college football.
It was great to catch up with College Football Hall of Famer and former BGSU head coach Don Nealon. That was our interview from September of 2011. Of course, Coach Nealon took over as head coach in 1968, and one of the best players on the team his first 3 years was Phil Villapiano, who would end up being drafted in the second round by the Oakland Raiders in the 1970 NFL Draft, would go on to star for them and the Buffalo Bills, and was part of the Raiders' Super Bowl XI championship team. And I got to speak with Phil last year for one of our Falcon flashbacks. I started by asking him how he ended up at Bowling Green, and strangely enough, he said it had more to do with basketball than football.
My father was a basketball coach at Asbury Park High School, which was the big high school in our area. And he used to go up to the NIT and scout the colleges and, you know, get his, you know, help him with his, you know, his ideas and all that, you know. So, and my father just loved basketball. So we go up there 1 year, and I can't remember the year. You'd probably do, Todd. And the Fighting Falcons were playing whoever they were playing, and they beat them up. And the whole school must have been there. I remember all the, you know, the school spirit. And then when it came time for me to go to college, I never forgot that. And my father said, well, Phil, you know, because back in those days, recruiting wasn't a big deal, you know. So he said, well, you know, where would you like to try to go to school? I said, how about that Bowling Green? And he goes, yeah, why don't we try that? So sent some film. You know, we called out there, and they said, send some film. And Don Nayland, who was the assistant coach at the time, and I guess he had out-of-staters, and he saw my film and invited us out. And next thing I knew, you know, I came out. About 2 hours later, I was a Falcon. So it just was it was all about basketball.
Phil, when you came to BG, Bob Gibson was the head coach, but for your last 3 years, it was Don Nealon who took over as head coach. Take me back to that transition.
Yeah, that was really something. You know, I wasn't really used to, you know, every coach I ever had was like an old coach who'd been there forever. And we get there, and I'm a freshman, and Bob Gibson's a coach. And, you know, I'm trying to impress him because he was a head coach. And I was thinking about, you know, my sophomore year. And then, lo and behold, you know, my sophomore year, Don got the job. So and he's the guy who recruited me. So it was really kind of fun, and it was good for me. But I just remember, I don't remember as much, but here's one thing I do remember. I remember we were going to play Marshall, and they had the longest losing streak in the country. And we're getting on the bus, and the word got out that Coach Nayland was going to leave. And, you know, I never forgot the feeling I had of like, oh, my God. And I think, you know, the word got out because we were playing so well under him. It was like we're going to lose our coach. And I remember that. And we go down there and lose to Marshall. And I swear to God, it was because however that rumor got started, you know, that Don was going to leave us, that hurt. Now, Gibby, you know, he was the, you know, I never really got to play for him, so that one didn't hurt me as bad. But just to think about Don leaving was not good. And then he never did, but which was good, you know.
Phil, your senior season, 1970, was not a good year for BG, unfortunately. Just two wins, it snapped a streak of 15 straight winning seasons for the program. It was a tough way for you to go out, and it may have been, however, a turning point for Coach Don Nealon and how he did things, and they would then string together six more winning seasons thereafter. But take me back through your senior season there.
Well, yeah, and I you know, not to point any fingers, but you know, when I look back, we had a wonderful freshman class, and we had some really good athletes. And I just think the program was a little too brutal. And the guys, I mean, we were banging up our own guys, and guys were quitting the team that should never quit the team. And they, you know, it just wasn't fun. It was you know, it was an old mentality, I think. And, you know, you had to be pretty tough to stick it out. And we lost a bunch of good players that I think if they were coached the right way, we could have been really good. I remember our freshman year going up and playing Michigan, and we played them to a 6-5 ball game, Michigan's freshman. And we were good, and we were tough. And it was just such a shame to see our – It just fell apart, and I blame it on we beat up our own guys, and the coaches just weren't they weren't making it fun, and that was a shame. And you know, for me, I just loved football so much it didn't matter to me, but I saw the program going downhill, and we couldn't do anything about it because we didn't have the people, we didn't have the skilled people to win the games. And that's what happened. And I remember my brother was 3 years younger than me, and you know, they got there, and they must have changed some things around, because it was only a couple years after we left that Bowling Green got back on the winning ways. But you know, my uh, My senior year was a pathetic. They got right back. But, you know, it's the way, you know, I was just out in Oakland this past weekend. We had a Raider alumni weekend. And we went out there and I watched the practice. And nobody even wore a helmet. They had no pads on. They were going full speed, but nobody got touched. And that's the way football is nowadays. I think you probably know, Todd, you know, with the concussions, well, especially at the pro level, with all the money they're paying these guys, they can't afford to lose a guy in practice. And I don't know, but that's the way it was. But I think Bowling Green and the way we practiced and the way we hit, you had to lose people because you just couldn't hold up. And, you know, football is almost like playing roulette, you know, Russian roulette. You know, sooner or later, you know, if you hit so much, you're going to get hurt. And I think maybe Don learned that. I don't know what the practices were like, you know, later on. But, you know, when you lose all your good guys, you beat them all up. I mean, I remember one year I had to go into running back because we beat all of our running backs up. You know, that might have been my junior year. So, it just wasn't right. You know, it's very difficult, that old mentality. I think I like the new mentality better.
Phil, going into your senior year, there was a lot of speculation that you could be drafted, and I know you were hoping to make an impression on the field. The team wasn't very good, though, so take me to that time and making an impression and some opportunities that you ended up getting to get in front of NFL folks.
Yeah, Todd, that was really nutty because, you know, you want to have a good year. You know, you want to be on a winning team, and we stunk. But maybe because our offense was so bad, maybe because the defense was on the field almost the whole game, you know, they got to see us play. They got to see me play. And, so I kind of was feeling like, oh, my God, look at this. You know, this thing is not going to happen. I mean, I was hearing from a lot of teams, but then I always thought you needed to be on a winning team to get drafted. But I remember the day when Dwight Perry called me into his office and said, Phil, we got you a spot on the blue team at the blue-gray game. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to be in a bowl game. And I went down there, and I had one of my best games that I ever had, made a ton of tackles. And then I came back, and about 3 or 4 days later, he called me out of his office again. He said, hey, Phil, they want you at the Senior Bowl. So between when those two things happened, that really elevated me. And I think that's why, you know, I got to be drafted in the second round, because it certainly wasn't from our season, because that wasn't so good.
Phil, I wonder if you could relive some of the memories that stick out from your time at BGSU.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my God, I just loved playing Toledo. I loved playing Miami. All the coach, it didn't take very much to get me excited to play football. So, and one thing, Coach Nayland was good at, it was giving pep talks. And Elliot Usilak being there, he was also very good at it. I mean, those coaches, they could get me so fired up. I would go, you know, a Toledo or a Miami. Oh, my God. I couldn't wait to play and, just tackle everybody. And, you know, one of my most fun years was my junior year when I was playing with Joe Green and, you know, Tom Lloyd and Tom Riletti. And, you know, we had a really good defense, really good. And I remember going down to West Texas State. And back in those days, the scouting reports were, you know, they put the guy's last name down. But you didn't know how big he was. You didn't know how fast he was. So we go down there, and we're playing against Dwayne Thomas and Rocky Thompson. But it was like a track meet. I was like, well, you know, at least you could have warned us what we were getting into down here, you know, because they were a really good team, really fast, really powerful. And we lost the game, but it was a fun game to be in because, you know, you could test yourself out against some better players. And, I remember we played probably our biggest team we played as seniors was Utah State, which was good. And that was a that was a fun game too. And you know, I just remember games. I mean, I remember Don Nottingham. Oh my God, never tackled a guy that was as powerful as that guy. And it was me and him all day long for 3 years. And that was, I think, he probably did some damage to me because he hit so hard. And, you know, Chuck Ealy, I remember playing against him when, you know, that what a scrambler, what a player. And I remember we had him down at Bowling Green. I think it was my junior year we got him beat. And this guy comes in the wind is blowing like crazy. And the wind stops and he kicks the field goal. So, anyway, I think I forgot the kicker's name, but what a game that was. So, hey, all the games against the Mid-America teams, I could get really fired up for those. I used to enjoy playing those.
The Toledo kicker's name, by the way, that beat Bowling Green on that last second kick in 1969 was Ken Kratz. Also, Don Nottingham, Phil was talking about there, played at Kent State. Phil, before we let you go, I'm sure folks would be interested to know how often you get back to Bowling Green.
Well, I was there. I try to come back for the Sharpie Shootout every year. You know, Glenn Sharp was a good friend, and you know, and I try to give the athletic department or the football team some money, so I try to come back out there for the Sharpie Shootout. And then, you know, I used to come to a game every year. I tried to make it, but now I'm back into the pros quite a bit. I usually go to Oakland a couple of times, and, you know, I finished up in Buffalo, so I try to get to Buffalo once. And then, you know, if the Bowling Green is winning, you know, they get on a winning track, I usually try to make a game. You know, and a homecoming game is always a lot of fun.
Now, Phil didn't make it back for homecoming last year, but hopefully we can get him in town come September 14th for the homecoming game this year with Louisiana Tech. And that'll do it for our Turn Back the Clock to the 1960s edition of the Ziggy Cast. Next Thursday, we'll have another episode, and we'll focus on the 1970s. And again, you can follow along also at bgsufalcons.com as they do a decade-by-decade synopsis of the program. And we, in conjunction here on the Ziggy Cast, will focus on the 70s as well next week. Until then, this is Todd Walker saying I Ziggy Zumba.
Thanks for listening to the BGSU Ziggy Cast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review however you listen. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.